Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim is back with us today, having survived his travails in the D.C. snowstorm. I did as well on Wednesday evening, but Jim's was far more harrowing than mine. So, Jim, it's good to have you back whole and hearty and in one piece. And we do have plenty to get to today. And let's start with a martini that we're not sure whether it's good or bad, but it's certainly significant. And that's the situation going on in Egypt.
No one would have ever imagined that Egyptian police vehicles would be set on fire and then dumped into the river. But as you mentioned, we are now into the curfew. There's no sign whatsoever that these protesters are going away or that they are abiding by the curfew. And we are expecting the Egyptian president, as you said, to address the nation in a short while.
So by the time you hear this, President Mubarak may have spoken. But Jim, clearly a little bit of a quandary. We're not thrilled with Mubarak. He's not a big fan of democracy. But we're probably a little bit more afraid of what could replace him.
Yeah, Greg, I was going to say, you know, you say by the time people listen to this, he may have addressed the country. Greg, at this rate, by the time people listen to this, we may have a new government in Cairo. I exaggerate slightly, but it seems like things are moving very quickly on the ground there. I've been watching Al Jazeera in English, the web feed, and it's just some amazing pictures. It just looks like your classic popular uprising overthrowing the government. Kind of reminds us of Iran in 2009 and some more successful efforts in various parts of the world, you know, the last couple of years. Whether or not the Egyptian regime remains, I don't think Mubarak regime will remain in place. I would nominate this as a fairly, if not a good martini, perhaps a long overdue sense of change martini. let's face it, you know, we're the United States of America. I don't really like us being on the side of the regimes that shoot people in the streets for protesting. I thought that we were very upset about in Iran in 2009. And, you know, we've seen the Al Jazeera coverage is coming as the Egyptian police are apparently pounding on the door and telling them to shut off their cameras. And I don't like the United States of America with our constitution and tradition of liberty standing on the side of the cops telling foreign, you know, international media to shut down and, you know, not show the conflict about to come. So I'm not really, you know, a enthusiastic supporter of the Mubarak regime. I'm sure a lot of these people in the streets may have be sympathizers of the Muslim Brotherhood and may have, you know, anti-American views and certainly not be on board with our vision of the way the Middle East ought to be. But we can't root for the oppressors here. And clearly this is – I spent 3 weeks in Egypt back in 2003 and just want to talk about a country that just – has problems upon problems upon problems and a ruling class that is really not that interested in fixing it. So my attitude is, you know, I whatever changes we're seeing, they're probably long overdue and long simmering and impossible to contain any longer. So I think it's just kind of striking just to watch the Obama administration, you know, Biden insists that he's not a dictator. And, you know, what now that the Egyptian regime has detained Nobel Peace Prize winner Mohamed al-Baradei, the former International Atomic Energy Agency head and an Egyptian citizen. Now they've detained a Nobel Peace Prize winner. I assume this means they'll be getting a state dinner later from Obama, kind of keeping with the tradition we've seen in Washington lately.
The Obama administration's response here, other than to say that Mubarak's not a dictator, there hasn't hardly been a word spoken here on this by the administration, which is reminiscent of the attempted Green Revolution in Iran when there was no moral quandary whatsoever. How much worse could you get than the Iranian government? And Obama basically sat on his hands and made sure that the U.S. had no input or emphasis whatsoever in trying to determine a positive outcome there. There's a little bit of a different twist here because a lot of people think Mubarak is about as good as we can get despite all the reasons not to like him, like you mentioned. So if he does survive and we're cheering on the protesters, that could be awkward. But in the end, if we're standing up for what's right, we're standing up for what's right. And I got to think that that's good for us in the long run. But it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. You got to think if you're Hosni Mubarak's son right now, you can pretty much throw out the curtain measurements because the rule that you thought you had coming your way either is not coming at all or is going to be very, very different than what you thought it was going to be. So
the French Riviera probably looks really nice right about now. By the way, it's funny, as you were making that point, I'm just looking at my screen and Matt Lewis, who writes for Town Hall, was observing, how can Obama cheer on the protesters against U.S. ally Mubarak when he did not cheer on the protesters against U.S. Enemy or hostile state Iran? Right. And in a way, it's a really good example of how the lack of reaction from the White House during the suppressed Green Revolution of 2009 and the shooting of Nadar, et cetera, really has tied his hands, that he really has boxed himself in unless he wants to reveal to the world that he's making it up as he goes along. So
exactly.
And this is the good martini. Cheers, everyone.
This is the good martini. And if Mubarak's son has, in fact, left the country or plans to do so soon, you know, baby Doc Duvalier just left France, so I got to think his villa or wherever he was staying should be free. So just saying. On to the bad martini now, and this let off Jim's morning jolt today, if you haven't seen that already, and that's that Indiana Congressman Mike Pence, who gave up his leadership spot, and everyone assumed he was going to seek other office, and he may still run for Indiana governor, but he's officially not running for the Republican nomination in 2012, which is a major disappointment. Hard to say if he would have been able to forge to the front of the pack. I would have liked to seen him be a major player in this, Jim, but he's just so good on all three legs of the Republican stool, and definitely would have been a major factor in the debate because he's extremely articulate and well-versed on all three of those subjects, foreign policy, economics, and certainly social conservatism. And it's just a shame that he's not going to be helping shape and refine whoever our eventual nominee is.
Greg, this is my hemlock martini. This is one that just has me supremely depressed. I try to be on good terms with every Republican running for president, since I'll be covering them for the better part of the next 2 years. But I think you should look at – I am still optimistic enough to believe that not only is Obama beatable in 2012, but it's conceivable the right conservative Republican could win by a wide margin and really get a mandate for conservative reform to a largely dysfunctional government. Now, obviously, to do that, like I said, you need the right candidate. And this is a candidate who has to be able to win over independents and really be able to articulate the conservative message in a way that people who aren't that into politics, who aren't diehards, who aren't down-the-line conservatives, they who don't necessarily read National Review or listen to Radio America, could say, hey, I'm on board with that. That sounds good to me. That's a vision of government that I could get behind. And of all the folks out there, no offense to anyone else, but Pence struck me as a guy who could hit that sweet spot of making a conservative message and making these things in very common sense terms that would be very conservative, that wouldn't be watered down or squishy, but also wouldn't be made with a snarl or with anything, perceived as nasty or partisan or extreme or anything like that. And, I completely understand that, if you don't really want to run for president, you really shouldn't. He's got a clear path to run for the governorship of Indiana and apparently the Republican Governors Association. You would have thought that he was a free agent all-pro left tackle the way they've been wooing him over the last couple of weeks and days, I understand. Rick Perry's very first candidate recruitment call went to Mike Pence, trying to persuade him to run for governor in 2012. So with all of those folks telling him, run for governor, and apparently if he didn't really feel it in his gut, he really shouldn't have. But those of us who saw him as a very strong presidential candidate are just going to be as gloomy as the snowy weather outside, Greg.
Now, Pence will not run for president, but a man who's run for president twice and may run again and will be irrelevant again if he decides to do so is back in the news. And this is our third martini. And this is a gem. Dennis Kucinich is suing the operator of the House cafeteria. And I'll let ABC's Jonathan Carl explain exactly what this lawsuit's all about.
Kucinich's legal complaint spells out the case in chilling detail. The wrap was allegedly unwholesome and unfit for human consumption, in that it was represented to contain pitted olives, yet unknown to the plaintiff, contained an unpitted olive. When he took a bite, the olive pit allegedly caused serious and permanent dental and oral injuries.
Jim, with all the issues that Congress is facing right now, and good people not running for president, this is the type of person who continually finds himself, for whatever reason, back in the public square.
Dun, dun, dun. boy, I love the – Jonathan Carl crammed so much delicious sarcasm into that report. It was brilliant. Many of us have not taken Dennis Kucinich seriously for a really long time. And when you think about the redistricting that's coming to Ohio, already it's been speculated that Kucinich might be the odd man out. I guess you could say he's kind of always been the odd man, period. He himself has written a letter to supporters saying, I need your help. I need your donations now because honestly, I don't know where I'm running next year. I don't know what my district is going to be like. This, in light of this, maybe he's trying to, we're going to see him on late night television with, commercials saying, do you have a lawsuit? I'm Dennis Kucinich and I can help you because maybe he's trying to create an alternative revenue source for expecting to lose his congressional salary at some point. Again, Greg, every once in a while, like, we kind of laugh at this, but then I kind of look, you know, we have 435 members of the House of Representatives. So clearly not all of them need to be Mensa candidates or geniuses or all-stars or Thomas Jefferson, George Washington level statesmen. But I'd really like to thin out the herd of the riffraff a little bit. And this just kind of, you just look at this, like, if this guy can get this upset about a pit in his rap, you know, go home. You're not meant for the real world. If this can ruin your day, I think it's time to, you know, go back to Cleveland and, you know, have a happy life with the beautiful elf princess that he married. So don't go away mad, Dennis Kucinich. Just go away.
The very interesting thing, elsewhere in that report, we didn't have time for it, Jonathan Carl points out that on Dennis Kucinich's own website, he describes himself as America's most courageous congressman. So apparently he's going up against big veggie wrap instead of big oil.
I'll stand up to anyone except a pit. Run!
On that note, Jim, be careful what you eat this weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.